Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
Basically, it's somewhere local to go to get easy to access help before they reach crisis point. So we're asking at the moment for MPs to help us convince Boris Johnson to invest in this network.
We can't just presume that people will suddenly switch on to mental health and suddenly everyone will like, hey man, you need to go and do this, that and the other. It's not going to be the case. You've got to create that infrastructure. And with that comes investment.
We don't want to be turning any young person away. They should be somewhere, even if it's while they're on a waiting list, even if it's to deal with some quite low level issues or some other sort of psychosocial issues, you know, there should be somewhere where they can get that.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. Thanks once again for checking out Mental Health Monday. More important conversations to be had today. Our guest is focusing on the Fund the Hubs campaign. Now, Fund the Hubs is all about creating safe spaces, drop-in centres, hubs for young people to drop in and be able to talk about their mental health. Now, in some parts of the country, these things already exist. Fund the Hubs is about creating them in areas where they don't, and also finding sustainable funding for those that operate up and down the country. It's an important conversation to have. We'll hear from Cara in just a few moments' time. Got some great news, by the way, about the programme. This week, it was announced that Mental Health Monday has been nominated for a national award. The Independent Radio News Awards, the IRNs, have shortlisted it in the category for campaign in journalism. So that's a really great bit of recognition from an industry point of view in terms of what we're doing, what we're trying to do, and being recognised as a campaigning force, hoping to guide people through this pandemic and, of course, beyond. We had episode 200 just a few weeks ago, and it's good to see that some people somewhere still think we're absolutely relevant, so that's good to know. So thank you to the IRN Awards team for putting that nomination upon us. The awards due is an online due in the middle of July. Does it matter if we're in? Nah, it's nice to be nominated. Yes, that's what we say. Right. Don't forget, the Facebook group is growing all the time. Mental Health Monday. Just type that in on Facebook. Join the group. There's loads of information on there. Loads of different bits and bobs going on. Organisations that are looking for support, raising awareness of events. Facebook, Mental Health Monday. Look for the artwork that matches the podcast artwork. That's how you know you're in the right place. It's free for anyone to join. And of course, if you want to post in there, absolutely more than happy to approve those posts. Right, let's get the conversation on. The Policy and Campaigns Manager at Youth Access, which operates across the country, is Cara. Cara Wayland-Larty, who joined me to talk about the Fund the Hubs campaign, the difference it would make, and how necessary it is in the current climate. It was a pleasure to catch up with her.
There's a coalition of us, of Youth Access, Young Minds, Children's Society Mind, and the wider Children and Young People's Mental Health Coalition. And we're calling for this investment in what we're calling early support hubs. So we want the government to fund a network of these hubs for every young person in England to be able to access. Basically, it's somewhere local to go to get easy to access help with mental health issues and the other issues that sort of underpin their mental health before they reach crisis point. So we're asking at the moment for MPs to help us convince Boris Johnson to invest in this network. So we're asking a lot of people to email their MP to get their support.
Now, this would be, I think it would be fair to say, a revolutionary way of tackling some of the mental health issues we face as a society, and an absolute game changer for young people. It's very ambitious, isn't it? And we shouldn't understate the ambition that you guys are showing.
We are ambitious, but it's time. Young people have been, I mean, we really can't understate how important this is. Young people have been facing the really sharp edge of what's been touted as a mental health crisis for a really long time now. They face the biggest treatment gap in terms of how many people need support and how many people are actually getting it. Young adults face the biggest gap there. And there are steps being taken to close that gap. But we need, you know, radical change. But actually, when you look at it, in many ways, it is achievable. There's actually, you know, services out there already which provide this sort of hub model. The issue is that they're not properly funded. They're not sustainably funded. And they have to sort of patchwork together funding from lots of different sources in order to be able to provide a proper whole person model for young people. What we're asking for is investment so those services can do their jobs well and investments are the areas where young people can't access any support like that, that they can have that.
And I guess as well, when you're trying to persuade politicians, you've got to prove that investing that money has a benefit as well. I guess there's the evidence that you've got from the organisations and the networks that already exist that's there as well. But I think it also takes politicians to really buy into the more sort of up-to-date information that we have around mental health and the need to tackle it at a particularly early age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the thing is with mental health issues, they do start, you know, early in life in general. So about half of mental health problems will start before age 14, and about 75% of three quarters of mental health issues are sort of established by age 25. So there's a massive opportunity there to intervene earlier in life before those issues start to escalate and have an impact on other areas of your life, whether that's employment, money, debt, criminal justice, you know, interaction with the criminal justice system. So there's lots of different areas where, you know, from a purely cynical view, you can stop costs escalating, but from a, you know, the person point of view, you can really help keep a young person's life on track and help them work towards the sort of adulthood that they deserve. We also know that, you know, when we look at early intervention, at the moment the mental health system has lots of amazing specialist services that are really, really stretched, and they have to put thresholds in place, you know, because they just don't have enough people to see everybody that's calling out for help. And we don't want any young person who's made the really brave move to say, do you know what, something's not right, I need some support, to ever be told that they're not sick enough, that they're not, you know, thin enough, that they're not suicidal enough. And these are the reports that we get back from young people. We want to make sure that they do have somewhere to go early, and whether that issue is, you know, an advanced mental health issue, or whether it's you know, something more related to a relationship that they're in, or the job that's being threatened, we want them to be able to access the right sort of support and advice.
And in terms of that, I know your accent betrays where your location is, because you're from Liverpool, but you're in London. And I've worked with organisations in Liverpool in particular for many years to support the work that they're doing. And it's quite clear from the work that they're doing, YPASS is a great example in Liverpool city centre, the Life Rooms sort of network that Merseycare has set up as well. It's about creating these environments which essentially become part of almost the high street that you would have, you know, your Greggs, your coffee shop, your mental health drop-in centre. And it's become so normalised for so many people in those areas that it seems odd now that other town centres, many of which, by the way, are searching for ideas about how do you encourage people to head down to the local high street or area. And I think there's clear evidence that these locations work, the environments created as well, aren't clinical. They're warm, they're community driven as well. And I think that's something which we should also bear in mind, that's an opportunity to sort of to boost high streets, to create these environments that don't just offer you, you know, that clinical environment. They offer you something where people come together to talk, where they feel safe, where they feel comfortable. And everybody's looking for that kind of space, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. YPASS, so the Young Persons Advisory Service in Liverpool, they're one of our members. So Youth Access represents a network of youth organisations around the country, and many of which deliver this sort of hub model, and YPASS is just such a perfect example. And that's because they've been able to work in partnership with Liverpool CAMHS, with the local authority, and create this amazing hub model. They offer support in almost every school in the area. They have family support teams, and they have such a range of programmes. That really does lower the stigma in terms of young people being able to walk through the door. You know, they might be going to get employment advice, they might be going to visit the sexual health clinic. There's even a GP in-house at YPASS that visits a couple of times a week. And they, you know, then it might uncover that actually there's some mental health issues going on there, or vice versa, that the mental health issue is rooted in something else that's going on. And actually, we've got an advisor just over the corridor that can support you with that. It is an amazing model.
Yeah, and actually that holistic approach is one which I think you're more likely presumably to encourage young people to get involved in, that they think it's a safe space, there's also a little cafe there, they can get something to drink, they can have those sorts of conversations as well. In terms of the engagement, what have you found in terms of that there are are there young people who are looking for spaces like this, if you like? Do you think there are young people who are currently going through mental health crises or mental health issues who don't have a place or space that they feel they can go to?
Unfortunately, yeah, there's so many. You know, at Youth Access, we're in constant conversation with young people and with our members who are services that support younger people. And far too many young people are facing really long waiting lists. And I mean, months, years, if you're not in, you know, an area where there's, you know, an amazing local provision, you could be waiting a really long time. They're facing these thresholds, you know, where they're just not sort of serious enough, developed enough to be accessing the specialist services. So they're essentially being told no. Now, we believe, in fact, we know that every young person has a right to early support. They have a human right to be able to prevent mental health issues escalating and to get help as early as possible. It's time we realise that, you know, we don't want to be turning any young person away. They should be somewhere, even if it's while they're on a waiting list, even if it's to deal with some quite low level issues or some other sort of psychosocial issues, you know, housing, benefits, the other determinants of mental health, there should be somewhere where they can get that.
That's the when we link it back to physical health, it's the equivalent of going to the hospital and saying, I've got a sore leg, and them saying, come back when it's fallen off.
Yeah.
And of course, the cost of repairing a leg, which is fallen off, I mean, I don't have it to hand, but I imagine it's significantly higher than finding out what the problem might be at that early stage. And that's when it really comes back to that investment and the value of that investment in those early stages, which you can model out and prove a case. Can raise the issue around sort of the creation of these hubs, that some people might go, the government are never going to set up a network of hubs for young people. And yet, in the week that we're speaking, they've literally done that this week in regard to education, employment, and training. So they've obviously recognised a model there, creating spaces within different communities that young people can go to look for advice around education, opportunities, training, kickstart, and all those things in between. So it's not completely out of the question in that there's literally an example of it happening this week.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously we welcome any initiative that supports young people to access their rights and their right to, you know, have a helping hand into employment. And it just goes to show, like, that the political will can be there when there's a political motive. And, you know, it shows that they understand that young people need specialist services that are different from those services for other age groups. You know, young adulthood is a very specific time. It goes to show that they understand the value of co-location, so putting a few different services under one roof so young people can access different sorts of support in the same place. What it also goes to show is that, you know, work and employment rates are really important to the government right now, and that they understand the impact that COVID has had on young people. It's hit them pretty hard, and especially, you know, with employment and money. But that's not the only thing, you know, young people's health, young people's well-being, and that whole range of issues that underpin that, not just employment and money. You know, that's also been really affected by the pandemic and was also really serious beforehand. So what we need to do is, you know, get the government to pay attention to young people's well-being, young people's mental health, and invest in those services that aren't just about getting them into employment, getting them off benefits, but really looking at what is going on for this person and how can we support them and really put the tools in place, and also really build the specialist workforce that's needed. Because, you know, job coaches might be brilliant, employment advisors, you know, really important profession, but counselling and psychotherapy, that's a really different skill set, and it's a regulated profession. And youth work is a really specific skill set and a profession. So yeah, it's looking at that wider workforce as well.
Obviously, you work across sort of a network of different services that currently exist as well. Plus, you're working alongside other charities to sort of make this call. Do you think that if you get everything that you're asking for, let's imagine, how easy do you think it would be to sort of adapt to a model where you'd have almost have a national structure in place? Because I know that actually those local experts have become local experts, if you like. And I imagine a lot of them don't want to give up a lot of what they've achieved and the branding and the awareness that they've got. Do you think that's a step which would be sort of manageable that those organizations would be willing to go along with to sort of fit under maybe an umbrella that did things a little bit differently with an infrastructure that was a little bit different too?
Yeah, so this is an ongoing conversation and it's a really, really important one, because what we really, really want to make sure with this campaign and any sort of policy implementation is that we build on and lift those services that exist already. This is especially important for youth access because this is what our members already do. This is the model that we've been promoting for a really long time. And what services need is, yeah, investment so that they can do that properly. Now, the local element is really, really important. They have this local brand. They've been responsive to the needs of that community, and that local image is recognised in that community. It's also recognised as not being part of the establishment. You know, it's not part of CAMHS that sort of turned me away. It's not part of my school. You know, it's something different in the community where I hang out. So that's really important. And I think any sort of a standardisation, I suppose, of the hub model is more like a sort of accreditation or something that commissioners and local authority leaders sort of recognise, but actually maybe that the local image remains the same and there's a sort of kite mark that they could stick up on their wall or something so that young people recognise, it's that standard, but it's still this local community focus. That's the sort of conversations that we're having. And Youth Access has previously done a lot of work on establishing, you know, what the sort of characteristics and the core functions that our members should be aiming to provide if they were to provide this whole information, advice and counselling model. So we've done a lot of work on that and we'll be really happy to help out in sort of monitoring and supporting services to get up to that standard, but it's really early days on, you know, figuring that all out.
Sure. Can you give us an example of, from some of the services that currently exist, of an experience that a young person might have? So a young person who's thinking, you know what, I probably need to speak to somebody, but I've never spoke to anyone before, but I know there's a building where if I step in the door, I can have that conversation. These networks up and down the country exist. Can you give us an example of what an experience might be of a young person who steps through one of those doors?
Yeah, well, in the first instance, they might not even step through the door. It might be that they're out in the community going about their business. If I think about one of our members in Croydon, they actually have trained up some barbers in the local community with mental health awareness skills. So it might be that actually a young lad has gone into the barbers and been a bit down and had a bit of a conversation with his barber about how he's feeling. And then actually it's established that maybe there's something going on here, and maybe the barber recommends, you know, there's a service just down the road where you can actually talk to someone a little bit more. It sounds like that's getting on your mind a little bit. So, you know, they're really out in the community. They're called community development workers. So they really understand the community and where young people actually have trust in sort of gatekeepers in the community, rather than saying, you come to us. And hoping that they sort of walk through the door. So then they might walk through the door, they might sort of be a bit shy, they might want to speak to the receptionist. So hopefully they'll be greeted in a really respectful, friendly, and importantly, a confidential way. These services are different typically from CAMHS because young people don't access them with their parents. They're a bit older, and typically, so they might come in, have a bit of a conversation there and really work out what is going on and what you need. Ideally, they'd be able to access, you know, if it was that they wanted some mental health support, there'd be qualified, accredited counsellors offering, you know, therapies where they could access that. Ideally, without an appointment, drop in. There probably would be some sort of wait time, but hopefully we can minimise that and make sure they can see someone right away. They might have a conversation with that counsellor and work out, do you know what? What's really getting me down is the fact that I've got this massive credit card debt and I just can't shake it and it's really having an impact on my family. So we can talk about what's caused that debt, what's going on with the family, but then actually let me see if after this appointment I can make you an appointment with our debt advisor just over the corridor and then we can sort that out as well. So we can really get to the root of these issues and just nip them in the bud before they get out of control. So that's the sort of experience. And they've also, you know, these centres are often like a real hub. So there might be peer support groups. So the service you mentioned, YPASS, they've got an LGBTQ plus peer support group. They do ambassador work. So they're involved in young people are involved in local campaigning and local advocacy. They're really lively centres where young people can get involved and do what makes them feel like they can get a handle on some of these issues.
That sounds like a sort of a perfect system, doesn't it? I mean, I often talk, it comes up many times on the program about sort of mental health in everything. And actually that thing you described there about, you know, your barber's the person who says, maybe you want to speak to these people, I think speaks of a world where there's so much more understanding, but you've got to create that world. We can't just presume that people will suddenly switch on to mental health and suddenly everyone will like, hey man, you need to go and do this, that, and the other. It's not going to be the case. You've got to create that infrastructure, if you like. And with that comes investment. Can we talk money? Do you have a figure in mind? Is there an amount of money that's needed to create the network like this?
It's a work in progress. So at the moment, we've given a figure to the government of 150 million per year. For the sort of scale up and roll out of these hubs. Now, we know that needs to be more robust. So we have commissioned an economist to look at some of these figures and really drill down into, you know, what does the full model look like? Who are the professionals that need to be in-house and how many young people should be coming through the doors? And what sort of intervention should be on offer? And looking at how we cost that up. And then looking at, you know, obviously in different areas it would look quite different. So there might be an established service that just needs a boost to either get more young people through the door or add on an emotional wellbeing element to their existing sort of youth provision. Or it might be that there's literally nothing, there's no building, you know, that needs either renting or building, that there's no staff, you know, that's a different approach. But we are working on it.
And in terms of that model, are you looking at sort of the four nations of the UK with certain age ranges in mind? Is that something you're able to compromise on to get things off the ground? Or have you got the thing, well, these are the people we need to help, this is the age at which we want to support them, and these are the places in which we want to be able to do it?
Yeah, at the moment, this campaign is focused on England because of the devolved nature of health and the sort of the structures that we're looking at how we implement this. England does have a better existing provision already. So at Youth Access, most of our members are in England. Now we have a project in the other three nations to look at what is the role of services like this in that provision and how can we bolster sort of support for that. So that work's ongoing, but with the devolved sort of health decision making, it makes sense for this campaign to be focused on England.
And I'm kind of asking you to look into a crystal ball a little bit, but if you were able to get this investment, say, for England, and they said, right, here's your £150 million, how quickly do you think you could show a return, not necessarily financially, but how quickly do you think you'd be able to almost have the data to say, we're making a difference straight away?
Wow. It's almost too much to dream of, isn't it? the data is actually a really important consideration because there's a lot of measures that, for example, our members take already that can be quite complicated and isn't necessarily standardised. So I think in order to implement that and then also to, you know, by the time you've sort of set up those measures in existing services and bolstered them and then set up new services, I think it's fair to say, you know, a couple of years would be an expectation. But, you know, I think that with the existing infrastructure, there's ways that you can quickly get new services off the ground because you've got that existing expertise that can sort of be rolled out.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that, you know, it might take a couple of years for it to sort of work its way through the system, if you like. But actually, quite clear from what you're saying, literally from day one, if somebody steps in and says, I need advice around debt, and you give them that debt advice there, or, you know, the next day, you've actually made a difference on day one, if you like. You're instantly making a difference, but then you've got to, because of the nature of what you do, you've got to then prove its value further down the line. But actually it sounds like you'd be making a difference straight away. And I think it would also be about those sort of communities really embracing those new spaces as well, and those different other organizations coming on board, which I think will make a massive difference to people's lives. How have the government responded so far? What sort of things are they saying?
So far, I'd say it's, you know, they're obviously cautious. They don't want to overcommit, but there's definitely interest among MPs. The Health and Social Care Select Committee is doing an inquiry that's ongoing. I think they're writing the report at the moment. Our CEO gave evidence, so did the CEO of Young Minds and lots of others. So we've been talking about this sort of model. They had also evidence from a professor from Australia, where they have a model called Headspace, which is quite similar. It's a nationally funded hub type model, but it does have that blanket brand over all of them, which is a point of difference. But there's a murmur, there's definitely a buzz, I would say, around this sort of hub approach. I mean, the conversation around mental health, and particularly young people's mental health, you know, it has reached crisis point. You know, we know that we need to intervene, and with the impact of COVID, that's made it even more urgent. So I think that there is that sort of driving force, and we are having conversations with folks in Number 10, and the government's new youth mental health ambassador, so Dr. Alex George. He's been really helpful as well, and is really enthusiastic about this sort of model.
Good stuff. Dr. Alex was on the show, and 10 days later, he was the government health advisor. So if I can be as influential for you as I appeared to have been for him, then hopefully we can make things happen. Do you think as well, in regards to sort of the response or the data and evidence which is now out there about the impact of coronavirus on young people, Couth being a good example of the sort of organisation that provides sort of information about increases in sleeplessness, stress, anxiety, worry in young people. Do you think there might be a danger that some organisations, even politicians, might say, well, once the pandemic's over, should we just wait and see? Should we go and wait and see just if things get better for young people? Because things will look worse because we've been in a pandemic, but things will go back to normal and things won't be as bad anymore. Is there a danger that people will get lazy, if you like, in their assumptions about young people's mental health?
That's a risk. But what's really important to note is that normal was never good enough. We were way behind, you know, and it's not because efforts haven't been made. We've taken real steps in the past sort of 10 years. It would be heartbreaking now to see that progress sort of just fall by the wayside, because the pandemic has had an impact, and that impact isn't going anywhere. Trauma, you know, the impact of trauma, and this has been a traumatic time, those impacts take years to unfold. So you might not see the full effect on somebody's mental health or their, you know, employment prospect or whatever for years down the line. We're still going to be seeing that for a really long time. So it would be really naive to sort of try and just draw a line under it and move on. But also, we have absolutely no intentions of letting them, you know, just move past it. As I say, Youth Access, we're working in coalition with our other allies in the sector. All of our members are sort of taking a stand. So loads of them have sent like hundreds of letters to MPs this week saying, we support this campaign and we actually want to meet with you to show you what we can do. And on top of that, we've had loads of young people joining in the emails, but also we've been supporting them to send handwritten letters to their MPs and local decision makers. They're ready, they're standing up, and they're not going to take no for an answer. So good luck with trying to move on with it.
I was going to mention this, so that youthaccess.org.uk, the website, but all those other partner groups as well, which I'll make sure there's a list as well in the podcast info, are supporting this. And you're encouraging people to speak to their MP and to put pressure politically on people to make this happen as well. And that advice is up there on the website, isn't it, if people want to go there?
It is, yeah.
Brilliant stuff. Youthaccess.org.uk if you want to find that. You can also find local services on there as well and find out more about the Youth Access Network, if you like. And there's plenty of local services on there up and down the country. Cara, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you speaking to us today. Best of luck with it. We'll continue to sort of follow the campaign to fund the hubs. Fingers crossed we can get some response from the government for you as well. I know that the government were keen as well when we asked them about the new employment hubs I know you've heard the response from the Employment Minister, Mims Davis, in which he said that mental health would be certainly borne in mind when it came to how these new advisors, when dealing with a young person's employability training and so on, they would consider mental health as part of a holistic approach, which, although it's not necessarily what you're asking for, made me think, well, at least they're talking the talk around mental health and seeing a bigger picture in regard to mental health. I just wanted to get your response to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that that is a consideration, but it needs to be a central focus. We need services where mental health is the central focus. And as much as employment advisors can do, they're not qualified therapists. So that's a really important point of differentiation. And in terms of where young people trust, you know, to walk through the door and actually seek support with quite a sensitive issue, an employment hub might not be that. It feels more like sort of, yeah, job centre or careers clinic. It feels like a different service. It could be that they're co-located, that they're together under one roof. But that's really an important differentiation. It's quite sensitive, I think, to work that out. When we're talking about a holistic approach, let's join up the dots, let's have conversations across Department for Health, Department for Work and Pensions, and see where these, you know, lines of common ground are. And also let's look beyond working age young people. You know, mental health starts before age 18. So if we're just looking at working age young people, we're going to face some barriers really to how early we can get them that support.
Cara, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck with the campaign.
Thanks so much, mate. Take care.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.